Hello and welcome to the Tank Slappers podcast, Autosport and the Motorsport Network's podcast for all things two-wheeled. I am your host, Lewis Duncan, and joining me, as ever, is Oriol Puigdemont for a brand new season of the Tank Slappers podcast. Yuri, welcome back. Happy New Year. You know, all that stuff.
Happy New Year. Thank you very much. We are ready to come back and stronger than ever.
We have many, many plans for this year, but we need to wait to see how this year happens because, of course, coronavirus things are still in play. Well, we'll just dive straight in because there's a number of things to talk about. And the first one is the fact that the Sepang preseason test has been cancelled, which is sort of what we kind of expected, although MotoGP was working to make it happen, but that's been cancelled. We've got extra days for Qatar, but it's still a bit unknown if that will happen, to be honest, because the virus situation right now is still quite serious.
I've been in touch with so many different people about the organization, teams, IRTA staff, and they cannot assure what's going to happen and when it's going to happen. So that's why they just keep the things completely open. They are open-minded and they are waiting for trying to have a more clear idea once the date of the championship starts is getting closer.
We know around the world there's a vaccine rollout right now for COVID, and there's a lot of talk about sort of February time when they want to have, in a lot of countries, the program to have been accelerated. So I guess it's a waiting game to see how many people have been vaccinated come February and how that affects the flow of the virus, as it were, before MotoGP can make a definitive decision on what to do next.
Yeah, I think most of the championship are waiting to see the effect of this vaccine on people. So yeah, and they will try to keep an eye on the evolution of the curve in every single country that we have to visit, and then they are gonna, I'm convinced that they are gonna reconfigure the calendar probably month by month, because there will be a few or a lot of changes in compared with the calendar that we have at the moment.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, we've seen already Formula One has postponed two Grand Prix, the Australian and the Chinese Grand Prix. MotoGP has a couple of flyaways to start the season, provisionally Qatar, which might be doable, but Argentina, America looks difficult right now given the situation in those countries. And also the logistics of going there just for one race. So if you cancel America, it might be difficult to go to Argentina for the costs and vice versa. So is it looking like we might see a more European calendar, certainly for the first half of this year?
I think it was not realistic to think about Australian Grand Prix for Formula One starting here next March. And I don't see really realistic, to be honest, thinking on going to the States or Argentina at the moment for MotoGP. I mean, not at the moment, but in a few months' time. I don't see how this is going to happen, considering the situation all over the world. So especially for the logistics and for the, you know, all the stuff. So I think that they will try to keep it simple, if you allow me to use this word, and then let's push for, if they can concentrate the calendar in Europe, that would be good. I know that they are thinking on a doing two races in 2 weekends in a row in Qatar. That's one possibility. Mm-hmm. Starting the championship in Qatar, they still don't know if they're going to anticipate the first race to the 21st of March instead of the 28th, because the 28th is when the Formula One supposed to start the calendar in Bahrain. If the MotoGP championship starts in Doha, in Qatar, as well, the 28th, they will match not only the day, but also the timing. It's not a good business for anybody.
Yeah, it's the interesting thing about this calendar is that we're supposed to avoid clashes as much as possible, but this was a bit of a silly one with Qatar and Bahrain on the same weekend. That is interesting what you say there about maybe having two Qatar races, because the plan is to, I think, or the discussion was that they were going to have the Qatar test a week before the first race if they move it to the 21st, so everyone can stay in Qatar. So with that, then, if you think... Provisionally, if we go to Qatar, we have the Qatar Grand Prix, but America and Argentina doesn't happen. It does mean that we would have about a month break. So I suppose from MotoGP's point of view, to have two races in Qatar would be better instead of having one race and then 4 weeks off or whatever it would be.
Yeah, because as I told you before, I think that there will be a lot of changes because at the moment it's not really... I don't think it's going to be optimistic going to Portimao. I think they will go month by month and trying to reconfigure and to make the longest calendar possible considering the circumstances. But again, I think this year will be probably as difficult as it was last year.
Yeah, I think you're right. But what's good is that they have information from last year. But one thing I don't think enough people are talking about is the fact that they have all the protocols for the paddock, but there's this new variant of the virus. So it kind of outdates these protocols a little bit. So there does need to be that needs to be taken into consideration as well, that we can't just do what we did last year. There does need to be some changes to suit the situation, as it were.
Probably they will think about this new virus or this different virus, but I don't think they will probably have to reinforce few things, but I don't think there's too much margin to change that, because in the end it's impossible to self-isolate each member of the paddock. So at some point they will have to take that risk that is understandable.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think we're going to be stuck at home for maybe a few more months than we'd like. But
yeah, I think that until summer, it will be very difficult for us to start traveling again.
So let's talk about some other news stories, because we had a couple of big ones over the past couple of weeks. The biggest one being Davide Brivio leaving Suzuki for Alpine in Formula One, a story that Autosport and Motorsport.com first reported. We've talked about it a lot, or it's been talked about a lot on the F1 podcast and on features about what it means for Alpine. But what does this mean for Suzuki? Because Brivio is such a massive, massive figure for Suzuki. I mean, everything he's done for them since he joined has been incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I think he was the key member of the team, because he was the one in charge of creating this new, let's say, the new team in the way of the constructor getting back into the MotoGP in 2013, if I'm right. I mean, the project. He's been the key member, and for sure it will be a big loss for the team, but at the same time, I think that it can be an opportunity for other team members to grow and to show their abilities in order to give their opinions and to try to keep the same direction, because I think that the good thing from Suzuki is that all of their members know are aware of the philosophy I think they all know what to do and how to do it. So I think it will be much a bigger problem in some other teams than in Suzuki, because each member of the team know what to do and how to do it. So yeah, I think in a way for sure will be a loss, but at the same time it can be an opportunity as well.
Yeah, you wrote last week a couple of weeks ago that Suzuki had to pick someone. If they were going to replace Brivio, it had to be internally. They're not going to replace him in the immediate term. So it looks like it's going to be a restructure, an internal restructure, and Shinichi Sahara, who is project leader, will take on some of Brivio's responsibilities. It looks like Ken Kawachi as well will do some of them as well. So it seems that they are, and listening to the interviews and quotes from, you spoke to Alex Rins on the Spanish podcast, and stuff he said and stuff Sahara said, they're all very, they're not negative about Brivio leaving. Of course, it's a big loss, but they're very grounded about it. They're saying, look, he's a big loss, but you know, this team, nothing will change within the loyalty of the team, with the atmosphere with the team will stay the same.
That's probably the main reason why they are not trying to look outside the team to signing a new team manager, because I think it can be more dangerous and more, let's say, counterproductive for the team. Because, you know, when you pick up somebody from another team, or from, you know, from outside, you never know how the people will react or will accept, or, you know, so that's why I think that they prefer to keep it, as you say, grounded, and say, listen, he has decided to take another way, so let's try to keep working together as a team, as we've done it in the last few years, and yeah, let's do it all together.
It's definitely the best approach, because I mean, if they brought someone outside, it's hard to come into Suzuki from another team, because Suzuki, although it's a factory team, it's a small team, so it relies more on unity than sort of big name people running the show, like say Honda, for example, or Yamaha. If you get what I mean, if you brought someone like that in, they might have not the right perspective of what a factory team, or how that factory team should operate, if you get what I mean.
Yeah, and in the end, I mean, they have all the team members have their own experience with the Japanese people, so I think the links are very clear. So they're just gonna try to reinforce those links and trying to learn from that.
And that's something, of course, that Brivio really forged. This is the thing Valentino Rossi said last year. The reason why Suzuki was so good was because Brivio got the Italian team to work well, to work together with the Japanese team, which is, of course, in stark contrast to Yamaha right now. So obviously, what Brivio leaves, although he's a big figure, he's left everything in place for Suzuki to carry on as it was, which is, I suppose, the best thing, is that he leaves, but he doesn't really leave, if you see what I mean.
I don't think really Brivio as a genius, but I think he's really clever. He's a clever person. So I think maybe that's the key of his character and of his success, because don't forget that he was the one signing Valentino Rossi for Yamaha. He was the one signing Jorge Lorenzo to Yamaha even before Lorenzo got his first 250 title. So he's the one rebuilding the Suzuki MotoGP project and making the Suzuki project champion of the world again. So I think he's special, and he has a lot of knowledge and a lot of background, but I would say that he is mainly a very clever guy.
Yeah, I think that's fair. He's definitely going to be a big loss to MotoGP, but Alpine have gained themselves a real... They've pulled off an amazing thing to sign Brivio. He will do something special with that team.
Yeah, I think how he managed last year, and how Suzuki managed last year without any single fight or problem between both riders, it is a good example of his character and his philosophy. And, you know, so I think that's another example of why he's so good in those areas. And I think that he will be a very, very good job in Alpine.
Yeah, I agree. Just finally, I want to talk about Andrea Dovizioso, because he's finally, finally spoken about why he quit Ducati, and it's for sort of what we expected. He fell out with Gigi Delinea a couple of years ago, and they haven't liked each other since, really. It's a tale as old as time, isn't it? Riders, Ducati, not getting on with each other, and...
Yeah, but in the end, he didn't say that much. I mean, nothing really unexpected.
But it was...
I mean, we all knew what happened because we wrote it, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago when, in Austria, and that Austrian, that's the beginning of the end. And we were there, we wrote about that. And yeah, that's the story that Dovi admitted the other day. I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah, I actually forgot about that story you wrote a couple of years ago until I was doing a bit of research. To be fair, I was at the Ulster Grand Prix that weekend, so that's why I forgot. So it's just, that's my excuse. That's my excuse. But yeah, I've actually forgot that was, you did write something like that. And well, as you say, it's proven to be true. He said, look, there was a big fight. There was a technical meeting that turned into a big fight between Austria and Germany. And that was it. Dovi seems to think that Gigi had shut the door mentally on Dovizioso. But it's...
There was a meeting. And in the one, I mean, I think Gigi... was asking Dovi for a meeting for a few days, and then in the end Dovi accepted that meeting, and it was Dovi, Gigi, and all Gigi's team. I mean, the technicians and the engineers working for Gigi. And at that meeting, Dovi was very, very, very aggressive. And that's what made Gigi get crazy, because he thought that he was, let's say, overexposed to his team, you know? Mm-hmm. So you can have an aggressive talk, but between two people, between two person, I mean, directly, not with, let's say, 5, 6, 7 team members. That's what really made him furious, Delinea.
Mm-hmm. It's
and that was the beginning of the end.
Yeah, I mean, it's not surprising this is what happened with Dovi, but it seems that it happens all too often with Ducati, even as far back as you think Casey Stoner. He had the big falling out with Domenicali because of comments of how Domenicali handled Stoner being ill. Then again, Stoner again when there was a whole test rider thing. And now Dovi, and even Lorenzo to an extent, there were two, you know, Gigi pushed hard to get Lorenzo and then kicked him away just before he got really good. I don't want to speak out of turn here, but I think there does need to be some sort of change within Ducati, because it's, history keeps repeating itself and it will continue to repeat itself if things don't change.
In a way, it looks like... I don't know if I'm right, but it sounds to me like those Formula One teams where the technical director is even more or as identical. I mean, his importance or her importance, relevancy is the same as the drivers, and they have a fight, and you know what I mean. So Ducati has made Gigi Delinea a star, as, for example, Red Bull did with Adrian Newey. You don't really know any other technical director like Gigi in MotoGP. Yeah. I mean, he's the most famous one. He's the one that appears most on the TV. He's, you know what I mean? So that's why his ego... is like, in this case, you can see that his ego was clashing with the rider's ego. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think it's a difficult situation, because sometimes it's even really hard to manage the ego of the riders. So now you have to manage the ego of the riders and to manage the ego of your technical director. Mm-hmm. So in the end, you have a double problem. And you have to manage the relationship between the ego of the technical director and the ego of the driver, the rider. So, it's a big mess.
Yeah. I mean, let's not understate what Gigi has done for Ducati, because it's been brilliant, but you can't also understate what Dovi's done for Ducati as well. And you have to say they're connected. You know, Gigi came on a year after Dovi joined. And the two of them, have, you know, the way Gigi pulled the team together and the way Dovi was able to sort of get the results. But yeah, like you said,
The thing is that Dovi always thought that he was underestimated by the staff. I mean, by signing Lorenzo and paying him 10 times what he was getting and these kind of things. So Dovi always was on guard. So it's difficult to work in those conditions.
Mm, absolutely. It'll be interesting going forward to see how Ducati manage this, because, I mean, they've got Jack Miller in the factory team this year. Now, we talk about what happened in 2019 in Austria with Dovi, but Jack Miller was at the center of that as well, and he almost got kicked away from Ducati for no reason, really. Yeah. I mean, he was good enough to go, look, water under the bridge and move on, but they scorned him once. So if they do it again, you know, that's not going to be good. And Jack can be, you know, we know what Jack's like. He's not going to keep his opinions to himself. And they've got all these young riders.
But at the same time, I think that the profile of the riders now are very different than in the past. I mean, in the end, Miller hasn't won a championship yet.
That's
not
fair.
Not in 125, not in Moto3, not in Moto2, not in 250, and not in MotoGP. He has only won one race. And that race in wet conditions, blah, 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 blah. When Mark was fighting for the championship and decided not to fight for that win. So I think, and I'm, don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to say that it's not a good rider or not relevant or that he cannot do a really good job. No. But I'm trying to say that the profile of the rider is completely different than Dovi. Dovi felt, and I think that was right, that he was a top guy there in MotoGP. For me, Jack Miller is a very, 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 very good rider, but is still is not a top guy yet. He hasn't demonstrated enough. I mean, it's not Maverick, it's not Fabio, it's not, you know? So I think that's why I think Ducati will have the things a bit more easy this time, because Pecco comes from, you know, from the, is a very young rider, very talented, but is another profile. I mean, he still doesn't have he's not a big name in MotoGP.
Yeah.
And Jack has a much bigger name in MotoGP, but is still not one of the top guys.
Yeah.
So he's not being there all the time like Fabio or, of course, Mark. So that's why I think that the profile of the riders this year in Ducati will be a bit different.
Yeah, that's fair enough. What Ducati has to make sure is they've got a great roster of riders now this year. They've got, as you say, Jack, a good rider, not a top rider yet, but a good rider. Pecco has promise. Martin has promise. And of course, they've got Marini and Bastianini as well. They've got riders for the immediate future and for the long term if they do things correctly. So I think that's what they need to work on is just... nurture. Look at what you've got and then make sure you foster that into something great, like Honda's done with Mark, like, you know, like Yamaha to an extent has done with Maverick. He's not fully shown it yet, but, you know, he can win races and he can be a top rider. Ducati just needs to work a bit smarter, as I think would be fair to say.
Yeah, I think so. And they need to focus on the bike. I mean, they just need to to focus on the bike, because they have really young and talented riders that will give their best without this kind of, let's say, ego that can be counterproductive. So I think that they have the power, they have the strength from the young people. So they just need to focus on the bike and try to make the bike a bit more stable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. On that note, we'll wrap up the first Tank Slappers podcast of 2021. Yuri, thank you very much for your company. And thank you for the listeners. Sorry we've been away for a few weeks. We've been enjoying some time off. There's plenty for you to read, though. Like we say, everything about Brivio on autosportmotorsport.com. Features about Ecolecuona, if you're interested. And other features as well. There's tons of stuff for you to keep interested during these lockdown times. We'll be back at some point next week, maybe the week after. I don't know yet. We'll decide that at some point. But until then, it's a very warm goodbye, and keep looking after yourselves.